Okay, we'll do a small meditation. Sit up straight. Close your eyes. Relax your face. Relax your forehead. Relax the corners of your mouth. Relax your eyelids. Bring your mind to your breath. Separate a piece of your mind off towards the back. Begin to watch your own mind think its thoughts from a distance. Don't just watch the thoughts, watch the mind. And certainly don't be involved in the thoughts. Don't be in the thoughts and don't be thinking them. Just watching someone else thinking them. See what comes up. Now stop any thoughts about the future. Don't let your mind think about the future. Tonight, tomorrow, next week. It's like a big, clear wall ahead of you. No thoughts about the past. Block the back of your mind. Relax into the present of this room. Our friends here together. Stay in the present moment. Feel the relief of not having to think about the past and the future. Just be here. no plans, no worries about the past. Present moment. Back to your breath. Then relax and open your eyes. Stretch.
I'd like to go through the homework. I'm going to just go through the homework and make sure you got everything. For those of you who want to catch up on the four that we did, take what you want to do. We didn't talk about Sambar. Sambar means it can mean to start a task, to undertake a task, but it can also mean to write a book. So Sambar means to write a book. Dangjiao means to swear that you will write a book. So every Buddhist book normally starts off with Sambhavachala. It means the author at the beginning makes a commitment to write a book. So in this case, Jijang Buche committed to write all the notes out from his teacher's lectures. And most of you know, I mean, it's a you swear that you will either finish or die. And there are books in the Gengen, there are books in the Buddhist canon which I have finished. And the guy died in the middle of the sentence. So it just, the carving stops in the middle of the sentence. And it means he did his sopa downtown. And he didn't finish the book. So it's the idea of choosing a task carefully, deciding what you want to do with your life. We'll be doing some meditations on what do you want to do with your life, right? And but then at some point you make a you make a decision of what you want to do with your life. And then you make some kind of commitments about it. So the idea is just to learn to choose carefully what you would like to do. I think we tend to do too many things. Most of us tend to do too many things. The internet is making that worse. You know, it was supposed to save time, but it's cutting down a little bit of time. Nobody has any time. And because they got to check their Facebook, then they got to check their email, and then they got to update their blog. And they got a Twitter about doing that. So the idea is to try to cut those down, try to cut down the things you're doing. Choose a few things that you do every day and that you don't break. You make a commitment to do every day or like that. So and then you check your motivation, all right? That was a big theme in the opening pages of the text. And we talked about it already. But it's where you just pause from time to time. It's a very, very sweet meditation. We'll do it, okay? But you pause and you say, why am I doing what I'm doing right now? Why am I here? what do I want to accomplish? You know, why did I come to the friendly pines? Somebody says, you're taking pine camp? No. That was last year. Why did I come here? You know, what do I expect to get? What do I expect to be here? And that's a very good motivation. Personally, I found when you do a motivation check like a couple times a day, like what am I doing? Especially if you get off balance. Like you start to get upset at somebody, or you start to get angry at somebody, or you start to feel lost and you don't know what you're doing, or you have a headache, or you're tired, or anything, you feel depressed, sad, then learn to do a, it's called Kumo Chipa, right? You check your motivation. Just check in with your motivation. Like, why am I sitting here right now in my house where I'm depressed? Or, why am I, when I met the person who irritated me, why was I there? You see? And there's like a magic trick. If you can come up with some reason that you were trying to help somebody else, then you just feel better right away. Everything's okay. Mm-hmm. So check your motivation from time to time. Why am I here? And 80% is you wanted to be with your friends, or you heard that food was very good, or the beds were really luxurious. A lot of your motivation is not so great, right? It's not evil, it's just like low level pleasure seeking. But then in there somewhere there's some kind of motivation for others. There always is. And you can find it, you can come up with it. So, when you feel down or you're not sure of what you're doing, or any kind of tired or you don't feel energy or whatever. Dredge your motivation for anything positive. And you can come up with some stuff. It's a nice kind of thinking to learn that yoga and teach it to my mother. You can find something, right? Anytime you can look into your motivation and you can come up with a single thing that relates to somebody else, you will feel immediately happier and better and more energy. That's like a depression, antidote, free. It doesn't cost any, therapy or what do they call those drugs? Antidepressant drugs. Just try it, okay? When you feel down, really down, you're not sure what you're doing, and you feel a little bit lost, dredge your motivation for why you're here, and you will find some kind of reason why you're trying to help somebody. It says a little bit about Chichen Rinpoche honoring other commitments. So he honored, big commitment did he honor?
He finished the book.
It took him 20 years to finish it. And he worked hard on it. It wasn't like us where he picked it up every few weeks, Like this partner book I'm writing for development, it's like 5 years. And I write a chapter every few months. And it's not like that. He worked on it steadily. But he makes we have another commitment, especially in Tantra. We have a commitment to respect our teacher, to show respect to our teacher. So, and there's a specific Tantric vow about how you speak about your teacher, or the words you use to refer to your teacher.
Mm-hmm.
How you use your teacher's name. So if you're careful, your own heart teacher's name. I'm not saying me, I'm saying whoever is your heart teacher. If you're careful and you use their name carefully, it can become a mantra. Like you can do a 3-year retreat and just say your teacher's name. I did. And I didn't do the, to tell you the truth, I didn't do the Bhajan Bhajan mantra. I did the other Bhajan Bhajan mantra. And I just said my teacher's name for 2 years. And it worked. Yeah? So then we are encouraged, especially in the secret teachers, not to speak of our teachers lightly, but to speak of their name lightly. So here's how he refers to his teacher. I'm going to make write down the record of that being of glory, unmatched in the kindnesses. Unmatched in the kindnesses to us. Holy Mother, whose name I utter only for this purpose. Remember, chapter 22 of the Bible. Good and glorious. He didn't say, you know, Mark. So then he's kind of keeping a higher commitment than he has. In the opening lines, he's keeping some high commitments. Okay. So I covered the first one. Let me see if I covered the second one. Somebody's printing the email. Yeah. If you want to catch up on the course, you got to finish the first four homework somewhere in this week. And I just covered the first one for you, okay?
They're on their way.
Okay.
Probably in the next hour.
Okay. Okay, then there's a question on homework. We're going to start homework 2. This is a review of class 2. This afternoon session is a little bit long. It's too long. I don't know who wrote this book. It was me. I thought we'd break it up. I thought we'd do some, we'd go through some of this teaching. And then we would maybe take a stretch break and a water break.
Not snacks.
I'm going to bring some snacks in. Snack away from the And then I thought we'd just have questions and answers in the afternoon. But the afternoon is hard. It's hard for me too. I mean, you have low energy in the afternoon, most people. So we'll break it up. We're not going to do 2.5 hours straight. He did 12 hours straight. But that's another story. Constant should be gobbled some kind of chip of soon and power then the issue on the top. So let's say this good enough, okay? This is a very famous verse, okay? I say, Dawit Tendi, Dishin, Nolet Ha, Dinda, Nyepa, Hari, It's very, very beautiful. It's from Nyamgul. Say Nyamgul. Nyamgul means a lama or a yogi or a yogini. They write the story of their personal life. Their personal spiritual life. It's called the Song of My Spiritual Life. 100,000 songs of Milarepa's Gurbhur. Same thing, Gur. Gur means a spiritual song. So this is just in couplets. The last two lines are a refrain. It means this is how I, the yogi, have practiced. Those of you who are Pandit, let's get your Pandit's name and meaning. Those of you who hope for freedom, they should get to know, we should do the same. So his song of his spiritual life is a bunch of verses, each ending in the same two lines, just said, hey, that's what I did, maybe you should try. Like that, okay? Okay. Then this particular verse starts out, the body and mind with which we have been blessed in this life is better than a wish-giving gem. Chittamani. So a jewel, there's a special jewel, like if you hold it in your hand and you can make a wish and you'll get anything you want. And he said, your body, your mind is more precious. Why? How could that be? How could it be that anything could be more precious than something you can hold in your hand and wish for anything?
You don't know what to wish for.
Yeah, you don't know what to wish for. Like your body and the mind that you were born with, you have produced for you high experiences that you can't, you couldn't ask for. You wouldn't know what to ask for. Okay? Better. Your mind and body that you have right now are better than any of the body assumptions you need. And this is the only time you will ever find a body and mind like this. It won't be repeated. I like that. Say, Nyeka Jigla. It's a very beautiful part. Nyeka Jigla means hard to find, easy to lose. Okay? Your body. Hard to find, easy to lose. Nyeka Jigla. Don't get long and dark. It stays for the length of a lightning flash. It remains in this world for the length of time that it takes lightning to flash. Mm-hmm. You've got to get what you want to get done in the time it takes for lightning to flash. The body's not going to wait for you. Okay? When the body goes, the mind doesn't have to stay. Mm-hmm. And then you're off again. If you understand the situation you're in, how precious it is, the chance you've got, how easy it is to lose. Take all your worldly activities and understand that they are like, I don't know, did you ever drive down an Indian highway and see them threshing the grape? They have these old baskets, and they stand in the middle of the highway, and they turn the grain up, and then the chaff flies off in the wind. Then they dump the basket back on the highway and cover it with a cloth, and they run out of the way. And then all the big Indian trucks come and they're on it. And they separate the chaff from the wheat. And then they run out of the highway again, and they hope that there's not another truck coming, you know. And then the chaff, it's really just looks like popcorn. You know, sometimes a little piece comes off a piece of popcorn. It looks like that. He says that's how much your normal activities are worth. That little piece that falls off the popcorn and you move it there, that's how much your all the activities of your life are worth. You know? So we should change the verse to popcorn and movie theater. And I think you gotta be really careful with this, okay? So some, you know, there's kind of like, I don't know. There are always people of lesser understanding who become fundamentalists in any religion. And then they start saying, nobody can listen to music, or nobody can go to the movies, or, you know, because it's all popcorn fluff, you know? Like they start making up rules. That's not what makes something worldly, right? I mean, a lot of tantric teachers that I know encourage that on tantric holidays, they ask their students to go to a movie and see if there's any tantric message in the movie. You know, like, I watched the movie, okay, my Lana told me to, okay? And I didn't finish it, I got in trouble for not finishing it. But it's called Waiting for Forever. And it's, you never heard of it. Anyway, it's some young man is, he's in love with some lady girl since he was a kid, and he's following her life without telling her. So like when she moves to new town, he moves there. But he's too afraid to tell her that he's in love with her, right? So anyway, her dad gets sick. And then he figures out that she's probably going to see him. So he moves to that town and waits, you know. And then they have a scene that they're sitting there and she's talking to the dad, and there's a vajra. And a bell sitting there. You know, there's a bell, a Buddhist bell with a button there, you know, right in the movie, you know? And I'm like, that's weird. And nobody says anything about it. It's just there. Check it out. It's by his bed. I thought something was going to happen, or they're going to get in there or something. It was just there. So, worldly activity means activity which is not magical, and activity which is not fun and deep and happy and, you know, cool. Meditation. And worldly activity is to try to, and also it means ignorant activity, right? Like, trying to be happy without helping other people. And try to ignore the people and be happy at the same time. That's worldly. I mean, you could eat a big piece of chocolate cake, right? And if you only really want to taste it and share it with others, then that's not worldly, right? But to stuff it in your mouth and not offer anybody else any, then that becomes worldly. It's not the cake. And in lower intellects, they screw it all up. They're like, nobody can eat chocolate cake. Chocolate cake is sunshine. Like that. Okay? So, get rid of things in your life that are not magical or happy or special. Stop doing things that are just junk or selfish, or you don't understand what's going on.
Okay.
Intent for the nibbana demo. Night and day, think how you can get the most out of your time here, because you don't have much time. Then the refrain comes. Okay? So that's the verse that the Bhagavad Rinpoche chooses as the first words of a 1,000-page book that takes 10 or 15 years to study. Okay? That's the first line. Those are the opening lines. And do something with your life. And that's kind of what the theme of this retreat is, right? Like, decide what you want to do with your mind. Where do you want to put your... Maybe the reason you don't have energy is you don't have anything worthy of the energy. And then find something which is worthy of your effort. And I propose that, like, going to Ukraine and teaching Dharma to Russian mafiosos, this is fun. And this is meaningful, you know, and you have a good time. If you do that kind of thing, your life will be really fun and meaningful. Okay. Alright. Then the second question on this homework is, what is samsara, right? So, you want to mispronounce it together? Samsara. There is no M before an S in Sanskrit language. Sanskrit. It's an N. Because it has to be an N. N is not allowed before S. So it's Sanskrit. Samsara. It's not Sanskrit. Okay. Samsara means... So then people say, oh, guess what, I'm going to go on a 3-year tree and leave samsara, you know? As if samsara were in Bhuri or Tucson or... You know what I mean? So samsara means, you know anusara, right? Yoga. So anu means continual. Sara means to flow. In some languages, the S changes to F, the R changes to F, and you get the word flow. So samsara. Samsara means the constant flow or the cycle. Anusara means like a continual flow. So samsara means the cycle of life. The wheel of life, the cycle of suffering. Mm-hmm. And then people think it's a place, and they say, I'm going to give up, I don't know, watching TV. You know, I'm going to leave samsara. And then you have to realize that samsara, what is samsara? Right? What does it mean, samsara? Why do they call it a cycle? Why is life called a cycle? And then there's a very simple example of samsara. It's the person who irritates you the most in this life, recently. Okay? Like you have your own collection of, they're like baseball cards. You know? Like the people who have irritated you. I got their picture here, you know? And there was some nun, what's her name? The nun from Oregon. She has a retreat center there. Washington. Yeah, I heard her give a talk with her, it was really nice, and she said, in Tucson, and she said, what was it? People have insulted you or hurt you in your life with certain words that you have never forgotten. You have repeated those words over and over for years. And if you ask them, they wouldn't even remember same gun. You know, so you're like, you've been meditating on this for years. And the person who gave you that, who harmed you, the person who hurt you, your feelings, wouldn't recall a week later what they said. And then years later, 10 years later, you can still recite all the words of what they said to you. You know what I mean? It's sort of amazing. So, what is samsara? The person who most irritates you now says something unkind to you, like you're stupid. That's the back end of a samsara cycle. Then you get angry and you say,
you're stupid.
No, you're stupid. Okay? That's the front end of a new samsara cycle. See, you plant the seed again. See, they say you're stupid. The seed is finished. If you could keep your mouth shut, it would all be over. But we can't. And then you say, no, you're stupid. And then we plant a new seed. And then a week later, that seed's going to ripen in water. They're going to show up again and call you stupid. Or somebody else. Right? That's a sign. That's a sign. It's not a place. And it's not an activity. It's not like watching movies is a sign. If you go to a movie and you're looking for the buttons and the bells in the guy's bedroom, that's a tantric exercise. If you go to a movie and, you know, to just waste your time and, with no higher intention, then that's samsara. And it will repeat itself. So small samsaras are happening all the time. Someone hurts you, you respond, then they hurt you again. Or somebody else hurts you again. So those are cycles. Those are small cycles. So then it gets on the subject of what it really is doing on the second day, which is what we're reviewing this afternoon. He talks about, he gives a short lamrim. He takes you through the whole lamrim. Then he starts talking about what, so you have a beautiful body, and you have a beautiful mind. Well, what are you going to do with it? You know, what is a worthy goal to do with it? And he lists three different goals. Right? The goals of the lamrim start beyond what anybody normally wants in their whole life. The lowest goal of the lamrim is beyond any goal that a normal person wants to get in their whole life. You see? A normal person's life, in the whole length of a human life, they never reach a desire for the first of the lowest goal in lamrim. Okay? Which is what? I just don't want to go somewhere bad when I die. Okay, the lowest goal of the lamrim is to protect ourselves from something after you die. Mm-hmm. Going somewhere from that. Then that whole thing is, you know, it gets a little fundamentalist also to me, you know. People are like, you're going to go to the hell realms, you know, get your mind off. If you eat that ice cream, you're going to be born as a robot, as a fake man. You know, like, and you know, like, it gets a little, that's not the point, okay? And we've said it many times, but you can, you know, just check in on it. You don't die, and your spirit leaves your body, and your spirit wanders around and finds a new body, but fresh body, and then jumps in there. That's not the way it works. Okay? Watch my hand. Are you ready? Okay, so you watch my hand go from one side to the other side. Right? My hand didn't move. 65 still images were coming up in your mind. 65 karmic seeds ripened in this much time. 65 seeds of doing something to somebody ripened in the time I did this. There were still photographs. They were here, 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 here. And then there's an illusion of flow because they're happening so fast. So it looked to you like I moved my arm, right? Between here and here, a different picture came up in the mind. From a karmic seed. Karmic seed opened the mind. From here, one karmic seed opened. To here, another karmic seed opened. That's all. That's the way the world works. You're just watching seeds open fast, one after another. You could have died between here and here. Okay? It could have been that I died between here and here. In that case, a different seed ripened in the second moment. In the second millisecond, a different seed ripened. And suddenly I'm seeing a fur. Okay? And I'm over there in the horse chain. You know? And I'm looking at the same appendage that I used to look at before. But the seeds are ripening differently. Different seeds are ripening. Between here and here, in any given person, the perception can change. Because it's changing anyway. This is not the same seed as this one. So it's not weird to say, here you're seeing a seed opens to see it as a human eye. And then the next millisecond, a seed opens to see it as a horse's leg. It's not a big deal. It's happening every second anyway. It's just another seed opening. And your mind has lost tons of every kind of seed. You've done everything to everybody. So to be concerned about what you're going to be after you die, it's going to happen as fast as my arm moving from here to here. The arm will stop. The seeds to see an arm will finish. And then other seeds will assert themselves. And that's what it means to be reborn. It's not like they pull your soul out of your body and they have a discussion and they go on the internet to see what kind of body you can have and then they stuff you into some body. It's not like that. If you can move your arm right now, you can be reborn in another realm in the same amount of time. Because it's just another seed opening. Okay? So that's a goal. Not to have it happen to you. Right? That you have to go, you don't get to be in here and there anymore. You gotta stand over there and get abused by humans. Okay? We treat our hearts as well. Why are you keeping them? We love them. That's really well. Ask them if they want to be around. How about they ride around on you for a while? You know? And they give you a caramel apple at the end, you know? So it's like, so that's the lowest goal. That's a goal. Then the second goal is even if you could maintain seeds that kept your arm human. Right? I mean, there's problems with it. It gets old. It breaks down. Everybody's arm breaks down. No matter how beautiful you are, how good your yoga is, how thin you are, how attractive you are, how tall you are, it doesn't matter. You have to lose it. You will lose it. Those seeds will wear out. You have to lose it. And it will be hard. The losing it is hard. You watch an old person go to a store, and sometimes the people just ignore them. You know, you watch them go to the store, and they say, "Excuse me," and the guy just walks by. You know, and then they're like, "Could you show me where the," you know, and it's almost like they're not there because nobody wants to be reminded that they will be this old woman later, and they don't like old people. They make people nervous because they know deep down they know that this is what they will become. It's not enough to just continue in this life. That's the second goal of the life. Third goal. Oh, so second goal would be, could I stop the process altogether? Could I not be born like this? Could I not continue like this? Then the highest goal would be, could I help others escape that pain also? Could I help everybody escape that pain? If you travel with us, it's fun, right? Great fun. All the time. Especially the jet lag. But I think if you travel with us around the world constantly, you can start to see patterns in the world. You can see global patterns and global shifts of patterns. And you can sense potential for major shifts in the world. Right? If you had gone to Kiev and Paris before that, and Vancouver before that, so you get sort of your hand is on the pulse of the planet, and you start to feel patterns then the patterns are such right now that this world could become an enlightened place in our lifetime. You've sensed the movements, you know, like you get clues here and there. Some Russian guy says, 30,000 people are coming here being developed. And then you go to some other country and they're like, you go to Detroit. There was one yoga center up there with some beautiful teacher there a long time ago. And now, I swear to God, there's a yoga studio on every block, every single block. You know, it's really weird. It's bizarre. You know, you can go from Rory's house in a car, not drive for more than 5 minutes, and have a different yoga class in a different studio every day for a week. That is cool every minute. And things are changing. The consciousness is changing. You know, Detroit. You know, and all these ex-auto workers are opening yoga studios. Now, I told them, don't be shy. You can export yoga instead of the cars. You know? And we can export that consciousness. And we are. That's what we're doing overseas. Yeah. So all things are, it's coming. The patterns are down. It's very interesting. If you really travel constantly and you're not unconscious, you can you can see these patterns. All right. Then naturally, as soon as you recognize that something is valuable, what's the next thing that comes to your mind? Like you're dating some girl or some guy, you know, and then you finally fall deeply in love, right? And you're finally seeing all their beauty. For the first time, you really see that all of the beauty in there, right? Then what's the next thought in your head? Yeah, I might lose them now. You see? And that's encouraged in the long run. As soon as you figure out that you have a unique body of mind, which is historically positioned in a time of flux in which the world you live in could become an enlightened mandala in the next 10 years, right? And then you're like, God damn, but I don't want to lose this. You know, I got to hang in here. You know, this is going to be cool. You know, you don't want to... The next natural thought should be, yeah, but I don't want to lose this chair. You know, I want to be here when it happens. You know, I want to be part of it. So that's the next natural thing in the long run. You know, you're encouraged, right? To understand that you could lose it. As soon as you know how valuable it is, the next natural thought is that I could lose it. Same with a girlfriend or boyfriend. In the case of death, okay, let's take three thoughts together, and then I review class two for you. In the case of death, in the case we mentioned, you know, I'm in a historical cusp. It could well happen that people all around the world, every country, are meditating. Doing yoga, even Bulgaria, I mean, we went to teach them kirtan, you know. We went to do a kirtan. And we sang all our songs, and I thought they'd be really impressed, you know. And then they said, well, we know some songs too. And I said, okay, you know, you can sing a song. And then this lady got up and she ripped the song, one of the songs we did. This Bulgarian lady, you know. And she got up and she ripped this song. And we're like, you know, and things are changing, you know. Things are really changing. So you go from, I'm in a very incredible time in history and in my life, and I could be part of a very beautiful thing. And then the minute you know the voice is worth something, then you're afraid of losing it. You know, then you're like, well, I could lose it too. But in the long run, you have to go one step more. What would that be? I'm in an extraordinary time of my life and in the world. I could lose it anymore. What would be the next natural thought?
Share.
How
do I keep it?
Well, I think that's implicit in the sentence. How do I keep it?
No, share.
That would be how you keep it.
Oh.
But if I said you're going to die tomorrow, what would you be thinking?
What's important?
What do I go after that? You see, like what happens to me after that? People get, I heard this thing in England during World War II. All the cathedrals were filled with thousands of people all day long during the bombing of London, right? And then the minute they when they the D-Day or they call off the war, peace day. What was it called? Anyway, the end of the war. The next day there was nobody in the churches, you know? Because nobody was worried about they're going to get blown up tonight, you know? And what's going to happen to me afterwards? Maybe I got to make my peace with God just in case, you know, a B2 lands on my head tonight. You know? And then the next day they're all empty, the church is all empty. You know? So the next natural thought is where will I go? What will happen to me?
How does it translate to boyfriend? Huh? How does it translate into boyfriend?
How does that translate into boyfriend? Well, where am I going to find the next one? Nope.
What do you want to stay there?
I mean, he's precious. What would. He's precious. I could lose him. And then I'd have to start looking at the internet again. All right, I'm going to clubs, which is like a special suffering. All right, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. That's the. I just reviewed the second class of this course. And then I thought if you had any. Let's do like 15 minutes. It's just an open mic, okay? If you have any questions at all, they don't have to be relevant or reverent. Like anything you want to ask about. If you don't ask about anything, I'll do some of the other things. Mm-hmm. Are we with Dharma people who don't have any questions? Oh, sorry, go ahead. Just say it loud so they can hear you.
So when my mind. Like seeds rubbing in my mind all the time. So why do I keep rubbing the same seed? Like seeing my husband and my job over and over again. And how come sometimes my seeds don't ripen like sports, then building, then, you know, something crazy. It's totally different, random thing. Why do they seem like they go together?
In patterns.
Yeah.
In small flows at least.
Yeah.
There are realms where they don't ripen in seeds. You just skip from realm to realm, moment to moment. Like, you're in outer space, suddenly you're born in between stars, you die within 2 seconds, then you're in a hell realm, somebody lifts an axe, chops your head off, then you're in another. It doesn't have a... Just, we're kind of lucky. But, not like if you had a car accident, or a stroke, or, I don't know, your boyfriend walks in and says he just found some other lady this morning. I mean, sudden, massive changes. But the reason they sustain, the reason you can have the same boyfriend for a couple of years or something, is that you planted similar seeds. So there's an argument in the Abhidharma culture about, is it possible to plant a single seed which has multiple results over a period of time that would sustain a flow? And then, is it possible that a single moment of a ripening of the seed could require multiple actions to produce it. See what I mean? Can it be that multiple actions are required to produce a single impression? And can it be that a single seed can split off into, what do you call it, the sustained perception of a boyfriend over 6 years or something? And the Abhidharma said both. Yeah. Both are possible. So it's like, I don't know, sports? Like I have, I don't know, certain plants in my garden. I have, what do you call those things? They're like a thistle or something. They're round, and then they open up like that, and there's thousands of seeds in them. It's like a dandelion, but it's some kind of special. It's called niger seed. Niger. But anyway, it's a kind of thistle. And they make these little open poppy balls, and then they open, and then suddenly make a poppy seed. So it's possible that one action committed with intense emotion could sustain a boyfriend for 6 years. And it's also possible that it would take 3 years of deciding your mama's name to finally get to be with her. Something like that. You know what I mean? So, here's the question. How can we help the world, all beings, with our daily work? Personally, I think, you read Buddhist scriptures, you went to Buddhist teachings, you heard Lama's talk, and that the scenario that you formed in your mind was that somehow you would keep meditating occasionally and doing your treatment book. At some point, you know, you would turn into Buddha. And then you would save the world or something like that. Yeah. But it happens gradually. It all happens gradually. And organic in a way. It just happens. Things start to happen in your world. And things start to shift in your world. And your practice, your yoga, your meditation, keeping your six times full, those seeds start to ripen. And it's not like there's a big revolution or something. You know? Just slowly, people in Bulgaria are learning Kirtan, and Russian mafiosos are meeting the diamond cutter at work, and just the small things start to happen because of your daily practice. It's not that the whole mandala of an enlightened world pops up in there. It's that it slowly slides there, and nobody notices because they're in it. You know, and then suddenly you're in Detroit, you're in northern Detroit, Bloomfield, Mills, or wherever. And suddenly there's a yoga studio on every block. And sincere, devoted people there in every studio, you know. But because you live there, you don't notice it. Because you're in it, you don't notice it. So I think, can you help all beings with your daily work? That's the only thing you can do. That's what you're supposed to do. You just keep doing your daily practice. And then if it's a decent practice and a well-informed practice, then they start putting yoga studios everywhere in Detroit. You know, that just happens. Then you get used to it and you don't reflect that it's enlightened. But then sooner or later you have to admit it's enlightened. Okay, it's like that. Of course you're getting it. That's what creates it. And it's happening, and because you're in it, you don't notice it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to get some distance from it. You have to realize how far we've come. I couldn't use the word yoga in the diamond cutter in 1999. Mm-hmm. As the editor told me to pick it out. He said, put golf. You know? Look at people can do golf. You know? And he thought people wouldn't buy the book if I mentioned yoga. You know? And now it's like, cool, right? You should see the mafiosa doing yoga. You would see. Any other questions? Yeah.
Can you review something for...
No.
Could you possibly review something? There's a meditation you can do where you can prove to yourself that you're not your physical body, right? Like, I am not my body because, right? And then you could take the step and say, I'm not my mind. By similar proofs, you know, like the disconnection between your body or then the mind also breaking you down. Can you review then if I'm not my body and I'm not my mind, then what am I?
Yeah, okay. I think it's very, very confusing. And it's an old proof in Buddhist literature for emptiness, right? Chitta. You are not one and you are not many. You are not singular and you are not combination, right? It's just confusing, and I heard it recently. I heard somebody talking about it recently. It was one of my own students. Maybe? I don't remember. But it was bad. And it wasn't helpful. It was like they were telling somebody, you're not your mind, you know? And the person just looked confused, you know? And they're like, but I have a mind. And they're like, yeah, you have a mind, but you're not your mind. And the guy said, well, I never thought it was my mind. You know, I just have my mind. You know? And then Then they said, well, you're not your body either. You know, and then he was like, but I knew that. You know, because I have my body, you know. And then they jumped on him and they said, well, who do you think you are if you're not your body or your mind? You know? And he's thinking, well, I'm just Joe, you know. They call me Joe. Somebody calls my body and mind together Joe. And Joe has the body and Joe has the mind. And that's okay. And that's the way it is. You're not owning your mind, right? Or you couldn't say, I'm thinking. And you're not only your body, or, you know, or if you cut your finger, then suddenly you'd be, yes, you might be. You know what I mean? So I think the point in the scriptures is that are you any one of your parts? But just for thoroughness, they ask the question, are you any one of your parts? Akasha, Ji, Venerable, are you your ear? You know, and he, after much thought, he said, you know, I'm not only my ear, you know? And so we can eliminate the chitta-bell. Chitta-bell means, are you one or are you many? We can eliminate the one. You're not just your ear. But then the top question, the point of the exercise, and the answer to the question, is when you get to the combination of all your parts. I'm not only my ear. What if you had two ears and two eyes and two nostrils and a mouth and all the stuff I got, and you had a mind, and a couple other stuff like my name, then you have a passion. Then you have a passion. Then that's not true. Because there are people who don't recognize what a car is. Like, you can have tires, and you can have a hood, and you can have the top of the car, and you can have the two bumpers. And they can even be put together in the right way. And if an Eskimo from the 17th century walks by, they don't see a car. You can't see it as a car. You can have all the parts of the thing together, and it still isn't that thing. Okay? Probably, there are objects in this room that we ourselves, in 2011, are incapable of tying together properly. There are probably many objects in this room that people 10 years from now will reassemble mentally, and they'll see things in this room that we don't see. In the same way that an Eskimo from the 17th century wouldn't see the air conditioner as an air conditioner. They would just see it as a pretty box with a smooth front. You see what I mean? And there are many objects in our own lives that we can't recognize that would help us. Like the internet 20 years ago, you know, optic fiber cable made from sand. To transmit the world's information on sand, on little pieces of sand. Thinner than a human hair. You know, we didn't ever tie it together until 3 years ago. You know, we didn't get it. And there's probably lots of other stuff like that sitting around us that we can't think of. We can't piece it together. We can't synthesize it. Discovery means new synthesis. Right? So anyway, take two arms, take two legs, take a head, take a torso, take a mind, give it a name, Geshe Michael. But it's still not Geshe Michael yet. Until karmic seeds open in your mind that force you to synthesize it together as a person. Okay? So the last ingredient of all conglomerates is the karmic seed opening and you perceiving it all together as a thing. Because without that, it's just a pile of parts. Okay? That's all they mean when they talk about all that. That's all they mean. Are you only your ear? No. Are you only your body? No. Are you only your mind? No. But are you your body and mind put together? And then you have to say no. Well, then what are you? I'm my body and mind put together, and then a karmic seed opens in my mind and causes me to piece it together. Without that karmic seed opening, you're the Eskimo from the 17th century who can't see a car when he's standing on next to the car, or he's driving the car. Okay? Got it?
That's all that stuff means. And then it gets so messed up. And people are trying to convince people. You know who taught me this? Chunigas. Do you know Chunigas? Chunigas is a nun from New Jersey. She had a daughter. What? Her mother named her Carmen. Chunigas' name is Carmen. And her mother named her after the opera. So in retaliation, she named her daughter Janice. Okay, anyway. From Janice Joplin. And then, just to irritate her mom. And so Janice used to hang out in the classroom, in the kitchen when we were having class from Rinpoche. And then Rinpoche would teach us all this stuff. And then we would go to the kitchen, and Janice would be there. She was like 10 years old. And then I, you know, we just came out of that discussion of Chikuga. And I walk in the kitchen, and I look at her, and I say, Janice, you know, and she says, what? She says, are you your mind? No. Are you your body? No. Are you all of you together? And then she goes, yeah, I am. You know, and then I was like stumped, you know? I didn't know what to say. Because I misunderstood it. Are you everything all together? It seems like that. But then it's the car that runs in your mind to see you all together. That's all. But it's not. It just frustrates me. Because you go to some teaching and somebody talks for 2 hours about you are not your ear. We knew that. Okay, anyway, maybe one more question. Then we'll take a break. Easy break. Yeah.
So, in the ACI courses that are online and the ACI 3, there's two courses actually. One was recorded later.
Uh-huh.
And at the very end, I've been emailing people about this, but no one knows. At the very end, it's you saying, oh, I'm going to give you this talk where you can take the entire long rim and meditate on it as it relates to the emptiness of each factor.
Of each what?
The emptiness of each step.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
But I can't find it.
Okay. Maybe I never did it. Maybe this is it. this is what I'm trying to do now. What do I mean? I mean, the traditional way to teach death meditation is just like kind of get heavy on people and kind of threaten them, and you know, like, you're going to die, and you're going to go to the hell realms, and you're going to, you know what I mean? And meditate on that, and you know, and then it's unsatisfying. It doesn't work, really. It doesn't really work. I haven't seen it work. I think you need to explain to somebody why they're dying. Mm-hmm. Why dying is a perception, and why aging is a perception. You see, you have to explain to somebody what we just talked about. To really get someone to appreciate that they could be a horse by tomorrow, any one of them, you have to understand how seeds ripen in your mind, and how there is no human there and there is no horse there without the seeds. Even if you had all the parts, it wouldn't be a horse. See what I mean? Something has to synthesize them together. So for me, it would be preferable to go through the last steps of the moment, which are meditation and emptiness, and then go back to the front. And what's the first great long rim? What's the first and greatest of all the long rim? Of all the steps in mind, but what is the first and the greatest? Find your heart teacher. So you know, you can take somebody, if you don't explain emptiness to them, then you're like, you know, you're having this, like the middle of this week, it'll be, which energy pep up do you want, you know? And then you get into these long discussions of, should we go to India to look for a lama, or is Nepal better, or maybe Dharamsala has somebody there, or, and then that's a unenlightened way to teach and study the moment. If you study the emptiness part first, you study the meditation part first, then when you come back to the first and greatest of all the long rims, which is to find your teacher. You grasp that you don't find them. You create that they're coming from you. And then I have friends who are very uncomfortable with that. I'm like, no, my Lama can't be coming from me. Why? They're too perfect. It's not a kapot, it's not a rikon. That's not logically follow. It doesn't logically follow that you can't create somebody who's better than you. If you create the seed. That's the whole idea. Because seeds grow. They tell Chiron. Karma grows. So you do it. You share with somebody else what little Dharma knowledge you have. That plants a seed. And it creates a Lama who is omniscient. Okay? Because seeds grow. They tell Chiron. Right? So it's a soft principle. Solid system. It's bad thinking. To say that you can't create a person who's infinitely wiser than you. Because you that's like saying you can't grow an apple tree from the seed. You know, the apple tree is bigger than the seed. The Lama that you create by sharing what you know with others in a gentle and sweet way is that you create your heart Lama. That's cool. So, but if you attack the Lama without that knowledge, then you get into these discussions of, you get into decisions. Should I go to Nepal? Should I go to, I heard there's a good Lama over there. You know, you see what I mean? We have shirts, I'll wear it tomorrow. They were printed up by our Ukrainian team. It says, Kiev, it says, Karmicheski Menijnye. And then it says in English on the back it says stop making decisions. And they got it. They got it. That if you start the Lama without understanding anything, then you're trying to decide which Lama should I go to, which country should I go to, which Indian town, diary or written Indian town are they staying in? You know, and then you go wandering around looking for them. And if you understand emptiness, you plant seeds consciously at the first of the Lama, and you plant a teacher by helping others consciously. And then they just show up. Okay? They just come into your life. In fact, you can't avoid them. No, they just Lama Aura met Kirti Senchak Rinpoche by leaning out of her window in the Lower East Side of New York and looking through a window across the way and seeing some purple flash. And then went over to investigate. Okay? I mean, she didn't have to go in there. Yeah. Okay? That's the way it works, if you know your stuff. Okay. Okay, we'll do a short meditation. Watch your breath. And just a short Kumbhal Chiklash. Why did you come to this retreat? What were your motivations? Usually it's a combination of motivations, like a financing package. And there's 40% of this
motivation and 10% dismotivation. So go through the different motivations you have for coming here. Be honest and don't judge them. Come back to that. And slowly open your eyes. Stretch.
So I'd like to read a little bit from the text, from class two. So this is a review. This is a review, tonight is a review, and then tomorrow will be one more review, and then we're on to the next one. This is the subject of what will happen when we pass away. And he says, in our minds, we have good seeds and bad seeds. In the human mind, there are large collection of good seeds and bad seeds. Dharma means mixed up. And Kantam Chera Shikha, whichever seeds are more powerful, Shikha, at the moment of death, Sela Niki Sunda Paye. See, that's interesting, okay? They are triggered. The seeds are triggered at the moment of death. So the seeds are like a bomb that hasn't gone off. And then at the moment of death, some emotion within us triggers them. And it would be useful to talk about what triggers them. Because then maybe it could not trigger the ones that are problems. In the end, what triggers a karma is not understanding. What triggers a karma is not understanding. So if, let's say you had a seed in your mind from getting angry with somebody, that seed was planted by misunderstanding that person. So they did something to hurt you. And then you got angry because you didn't understand that they were coming from you. The reason that you can reach nirvana, right, the end of your negative emotions, is that is understanding. See, if you understand that the person is coming from you, then it's almost impossible to get angry with them. And you might get angry with yourself sometimes, but if you realize that this person is saying something bad to you because you said something bad to somebody last week, then it, your anger would get less and less. It would be less and less possible to be angry. And then you would reach nirvana. Nirvana means the permanent ending of your negative emotions. But let's say you did. So misunderstanding where angry people come from is required to plant seed. Because you have to get angry, you have to misunderstand where they're coming from. It's also required for a seed to be triggered, for a seed to open. If you don't misunderstand what's going on, then it's not possible for those seeds to go off. It's very interesting. Okay, as you die, and seeds, let's say, for example, you might remember someone that you had been angry at or something like that. So you have a seed in your mind, the anger starts to come up again. If you trigger the seed, then that would cause you to take a, we say take a lower birth, right? But it's not taking lower birth. It would cause you to see your own differently, like as a horse. And then it's not possible for that seed to be triggered or opened unless you misunderstand what's happening to you. If you're aware as you die that the process of death is coming from you, it's not possible to trigger a bad seed. It's very interesting. Okay. Sunda Panima. Bini Randula Kantam Chewa Panna Nigewa Rantam Cheshim. So if we look at what seeds in us are stronger, it's the negative seeds. Like negative emotions seem to be stronger than positive emotions. Like we dwell more on ex partners than on current partners. that you're having a good time with. So, and you dwell on things in the past that hurt you. Negative experiences we seem to dwell on more than positive experiences. And we have more negative seeds than positive seeds. Whether or not a karma is strong or not, whether a seed is strong or not, right, powerful or not, it depends on, he says, kuno, jorwa, and ju. And so these young people, what could those be? Kuno, jorwa, and ju.
Versus three of the things that make a seed strong.
Yeah, it's three of the four things that make a seed strong. So we go around the world, we teach people about karma, you know, and then we get to a point where they say, how can I make it happen faster? Because if you can't make karma ripen faster, my big deal is that if I can't show somebody how to make karma ripen fast, they will never draw a connection between what they did and what came to them. See what I mean? I can try to talk somebody into giving money to poor people. If they don't get some kind of return before they forget that they gave the money, then they'll never draw a connection between them. If it takes a year for them to get something back, then they'll never believe in the principles. My job, as we travel around the world, is to try to give people a method that will make seeds ripen fast. Because if I don't, and they do something nice in 2011 and it takes about 2015 for it to come back, then they won't draw a connection and they won't follow the system. You see what I mean? So he says something interesting here. He says, whether the power of the seed is strong or not depends on kunlong, jorwa, and ju. He calls it kunlong, jorwa, ju. Kunlong means what?
Motivation.
Jorwa means how you actually do the thing. And then ju? Ju. Ju means tatu. Ju means the tail of the dog is called juma.
Yeah.
It means the tail of the tail and the completion. How you wrap it up. So what's he missing?
The person you're going
to
do it
to. Yeah, she. He didn't mention she. So classically, there are four ways to make the karma work in fast. She, sabha, dua, and partner. By the way, sabha, she's called Hunlo, but that's only a third of sabha, I think. There's kunlo, there's nomo, and there's something else. Anyway, there are different parts of sabha. There's kunlo. No, inside them.
Recognition.
Yeah, the client. And the giver. The giver.
I would like one
thing.
It's called Dushe, Kulong, and Dushe, Kulong, and Yomo. I think there's only three. Dushe, Kulong, and Yomo. I think it's two. So anyway, he didn't mention all the ways to make the comic class. Now we've established all the ways to make she means... you commit the karma towards a heavy karma object, such as your parents, your teacher, someone who's having a serious emergency. What's the other one?
Someone's doing
that stuff. Yeah, that's Kunlong. I'm sorry, that's a she. He didn't mention it here. Kunlong means what your motivation is. Nowadays, we talk a lot about Harry and Sally on the tours.
I
got a clip of it. You know that story?
So
I can't do it very well.
You do it great.
It's the afternoon, not really the time. But anyway, it's a part in Harry and Sally where she had a dinner at a restaurant. And she starts having an orgasm, and she starts going, or whatever they do. And then some rich lady walks in the restaurant, and she's all dressed up really fancy, and she's got, I imagine, the clip doesn't match my imagination, but she has a white suit on, and all this gold, and pearl necklace, and she sits down. And then the waiter is standing next to her with a menu. And she's like staring, everybody else is staring at this lady making these sounds in the middle of the restaurant, in the middle of a meal. And she's like everybody else, she's staring at this lady. And then the waiter finally taps her on the shoulder and says, madame, here's the menu, what would you like? And she says, I don't need a menu. Whatever you're having, give me that. The idea is that motivation, part of your motivation, right? The second way to make a karma ripen fast would be in the back of your mind,
if this works for me, then other people will see me and they will imitate me. You see what I mean? Like, if something's obviously, if you tell somebody I'm doing NFL's, you know, salad thing, and you look great, you know, like you were on the way last week and this week you look great, and, you know, they say, what happened, you know? It's I'm doing NFL's salad thing. You know, then everybody will do NFL salad thing. You don't have to run around trying to convince people to do NFL salad thing. You just do it yourself. And if you look obviously like really good, then everyone's going to go to NFL and ask them to teach them the salad thing, right? So it's the power of an example. So in my mind, motivation. One of your motivations can be, I want to save the world. I want to help other people. But the way you help people is they watch you and they see what you're doing, and if it looks good, they try it. You know what I mean? You can talk all day about NFL salad thing, but if you don't eat the salad and then you don't look better, then it doesn't matter. No one's going to do it anyway. See what I mean? You can give Dharma talks one after the other for 20 years and nobody will do anything. If you look better, then somebody will ask you, what are you doing? And you say, I'm doing NFL salad thing. So in my mind, motivation would be like, I'm going to learn these practices. I'm going to get good at them. People will see how happy I am and well-adjusted I am and how successful I am. And then naturally they'll ask me, how did you do that? And that's a better way of teaching than trying to go door-to-door and convince people. See what I mean? So for me, that's motivation. Jorwa means, of course, that you actually do the good deed. Jip means how you think about it afterwards. And that we can talk about. I don't know. I don't want to give a DCI talk. Right? I have too many of them. Shiv Darshan, whether a karma is powerful or not depends on those factors. What was your motivation? Who did you do it towards? How did you do it? And how did you think about it after you did it? But those are the things that she gave it. So people, you know, most of us think that the bad deeds we've done are not so big, and that the good deeds we've done are really big. Let's take the example of a game chuk. What's a game chuk? Game is what? Game what? Chuk means a child. It's usually the child of an animal. Hak chuk is what?
Baby.
A pig baby. Luk chuk is a
sheep.
Baby sheep. Bak chuk is a cat. Nachuk?
What's
it about?
Baby fish.
You can say that. So what's a gechu? It's a child of virtue. And that's the Tibetan word for a disciple. It's a nice word. It's a child of goodness. A goodness child. Gechu. It says, take a gechu. Let's say you just say a single word to them. Okay? Out of anger. You're angry. And you say something to your student out of anger. Simple word. The kunlo, the motivation is anger, extreme anger. Okay? You choose the word that you know would most mama harta. What's that mean in Tantra? Nela Dhimma.
The point.
To strike a. In Tantra, it means to strike a. Like the middle of a chakra or something. Like you do a certain pose in yoga and it's meant to. It strikes the middle of a chakra. But here it's a single word that you insult your student with. And you mama harta. Like you try to strike a nerve. Then afterwards, you think, yeah, I'm really cool. You know, I really hurt your You know, a single word in Akarta. You know, and you've got Nadia. What's Nadia?
Right.
What's it literally mean?
I'm the king.
I'm the king. Nadia. It's like Muhammad Ali. And then King Sam means arrogant. So you think, afterwards you don't regret it. You're like, I hurt them, and nobody could hurt someone else so much with a single word. I'm really good at it. You're like that. See? Chepe. Joy would Jason. Pudapo. The preparation for the wording. You know, you got angry and you planned it. Then lo means you said the word. J means afterwards you relished it. Right? Pudapo means very, very colloquial word for bad, and it means perfect. Like you have to say it like that. It's perfect. Pudapo. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely perfect. Like, how is the winner? It's absolutely perfect. Yeah. In this case, what? All three parts of the bad dream were Pudapo. Okay? Pudapo Shinya. Shenya, Shinya. So he's talking about how to make the karma powerful, but he's talking about a negative karma. Shenya, Shinya, Pudapo So he wants to give an example of how you could make an almost insignificant action significant. Like, how you could make a small virtue and turn it into a huge result. Or how you could do a small non-virtue and turn it into a big result. So he takes the example of a sheep. What's a sheep?
Sheep.
Sheep means bed bug. Okay? Like if you've spent any time in India or Tibet, sheeps are an important Sunday. I mean, once you get them, you can't get rid of them. And, you know, many foreigners and Bamsala spend their time figuring out how to get rid of sheep. Okay? So sheep sepatabu, let's say you want to kill a bed bug. You kill your bed bug. And you find them, okay? If you really want to know, like you sleep all night in the wooden bed, they hide inside the knot in the wood, you can't get them out. And then they come out at night. And they crawl over you and they suck your blood. And then I don't know why, but they walk over to the wall and they crawl up on the wall and they hang out there until like they get. So then you get up in the morning and there's these bed bugs hanging on the wall and they're like this big and they're filled with your blood. They're all like ruby colored. And it's really disgusting. Anyway, so it's this pleasure you take in smashing one of them who is hanging on the wall with your blood in it. So Sheikh said to Babylon, you're angry, like you couldn't sleep. They crawl on you. When they start crawling, they wait until you're almost asleep, and then they go for the warmest parts of your body, which is your crotch, usually. Okay? And no, they do. And it's really icky. It's really scary. And then, you know, you get upset, and you get really angry, and you're like throwing off the blankets in your crotch, and you're like scratching at them. That's the kudwa. Then what's the jorwa? What's jorwa? He said you smash them, but how you smash them? And if you're good at it, you like make them suffer. You know, like you put the thumb down slowly, and you break their leg, and you break their hair. He's talking about that. He's talking about a bad deal. Jorwa zuru din yepaso. This is a urine dump. You make them suffer for as long as you can. Parts of the subject, then finally you kill them. Then afterwards you say, now everything's better. Yeah. I really fixed them. Okay? So you've got three elements in the bad deed. You were very angry and upset that they were crawling all over your project. And then you killed them with the most possible pain. And then afterwards you thought about, oh, this is, now everything's better. Yeah. Got it? Okay. that single action with those three elements complete is an extremely powerful karma. Okay? Almost like killing a person. People keep asking me, oh, I just did a small karma, how could I get in such a big result? It's those three elements. You know? How angry were you? How much pain did you wish to inflict? And then how did you feel about it afterwards? Okay? The good deeds that you and I do are not powerful. If we wanted them to be powerful, we would need Jorwa Kunlo Moshiju. Okay, same ones. Except he adds Moa. What's Moa? Dedication. Like after you do the good deed, you say, I dedicate that all the people who are corrupt in the government in Ukraine should suddenly see the light. You know what I mean? You set the karma. Also, Nambakshi Gurgila. Ramacha de Gimonani Damokuno Rakshin Rak Chanchuk Sendam. At best, when you do a good action, like what? Like coming to Friendly Pines camp, putting up a defense for 7 days. Okay. By the way, they're trying to find you. That more, there's like 20 initiatives going to find you there. We almost flew somebody to El Paso and out from it and bring back a truck there. Even coming here, your dream of coming here should be, I hope I can contribute to changing the world. That's Chanchukisam. So you don't need to think, you're going to have some Kung Fu Panda 2 realizations. I didn't see it, but I was looking at other people's shoulders on the plane. I see so many movies that are like, then you give the essence and you don't have to waste your time. It's not going to be some, big breakthrough like that. Like the love for everyone in the world. It doesn't have to be some, that you're on a mountaintop and there's a shining, the clouds break open and light comes down on you. It's not going to be like that, okay? You're going to be in Bulgaria, and you're going to turn on the hot water after 4 days without a shower, and it's going to be all cold and rusty colored. And then you're going to pull yourself together from the jet lag and go give a Dharma talk somewhere. And that's for the trip. You're going to change the world that way to a little tiny inconvenience. Okay? It's not going to be some glorious thing up on a mountain. But it's available to you. You have it. So that motivation, even why I came here, should be, I will learn something that I can change the world. And you can, and you do it. Okay? Alright. Medium motivation would be, I hope I can get out of suffering altogether. Minimum motivation would be, I hope I don't go to a bad place after I die. Then he says, Sampat Samyang Dogma Nante. It seems to me that anyone with even those motivations is extremely rare. So if you say, my good deeds are better than my bad deeds, if I don't, I'm not afraid of dying because I got so many good seeds and I don't have so many bad seeds. Then he says, but just to have any of those three attitudes is minimal. And nobody has them. So where are you going to go after you die? It's like, what do you think? Most people's dreams are limited to, like food and sex in this life, something like that. I mean, what it really comes down to, your whole life's effort is house and food and sex. And what you have to do to get those things is more than that. It's how pretty. We believe that we have to hurt people to get them. Sangyate prasenya vamete. Mani chen vachitya virinsa manyam senva vinde. Nidan manyam shadari. Even if you do decide to do some good deed, and then he gives the example of mani korchamati. What's mani?
Children.
Yeah, here it means on mani bhimiko. It means that prayer. They say mani in the monastery, sure. You want to do one rosary of mani, right? All you're trying to do is get through 108 mani from my bhimikos. Then he says, now the mani, you can't concentrate on it. You start thinking about everything else except the mani bhimiko. And nidam, you start getting sleepy, like now. Nayam, and you just think about everything else. Shadayam, you can't even recite a minute and a half of Om Mani Padme Hum without thinking about other stuff and getting sleepy and bored, and etc. Even if all you want to do is read Gandhi Bhagyama one time, it's very difficult to concentrate on it. What's Gandhi Bhagyama? It's a prayer to Jetta Kapha. You're going to be doing it a couple times this week. It's in your notebook. It's very famous. Everybody does it. He even mentioned it in the text. And it's, you know, it's going to take you an hour to get through an extended meditation on the Gandhi Bhagyama. And if you spend 10 minutes thinking about it, you'd be lucky. And then 50 minutes if you spend thinking about dinner or what you're going to do after the class. That's what he said. Also, after you finish, most people, they say, oh, I did a good karma. I hope I can get croissants tomorrow. Like, what they want, their dream of what the good karma will produce is kind of limited. The good deeds we do are not very strong. Dashini Joey Madhava, Dashin Nikolata Judy Nibaba, Dashin Sama Madhava Shada Yinde. Some people do their rest okay. But when it gets to the actual execution of the good deed, they're not so strong. Like, they have good plans and they have good dedication effort. Some people are okay with the actual good deed, but before they do it, they don't have much motivation to do it. And after they do it, they don't think much about it. Some people manage to make them all impure. Therefore, the negative karmas in our mind are well planned, well executed, and well appreciated. Absolutely. And they're stronger. They're more powerful. Chikar, so at the moment of death, the karmas which get activated at the moment of death are probably going to be negative ones. If a negative karma is activated as you die, it must create a form which is worse than you. If a negative karma is activated as you die, it cannot create a human form. You must create a lower form, like an animal form or worse than you. And then the Geshe and then some of the Devatachyapari. Then Prabhupada Rinpoche says, therefore it's a foregone conclusion that we're all Nowadays you see people running around, they go to some big lama and they say, can you tell me what I'm gonna be born as in my next life? Can you do a mo? So he says, mo. Can you open a holy book and tell me what's my future? If that lama says, don't worry, after you die, you're going to have a nice birth, we feel, relieved. Yeah. If they say you're going to go to a worse place after you die, we get all scared. But who can tell? And who knows for sure? He says. Deva Chimbakanta Jamala Molum Tisam Chemigo. You don't have to do fortune telling to figure out where you're going to go after this. Deva Tuchi Chemi Vodera Machena Pahuri Vendu Dume Narne Dunten Nan Signore. Your future has already been foretold in countless scriptures by Lord Buddha and the great sages of the past. Okay? For example, even just Arya Nagarjuna said in the Rinchen Tower, String of Jewels, Mige Wale Dubya Pur, Deshinyan or Tandito, Dele Bedo Tandit or Kiloku the Devata. He says, if you hurt other people, you will suffer, and all pain comes from hurting other people. And all bad rebirths come from hurting other people. Get it? If you help other people, deva tandra, you will go to a higher place after you die. Get up on the deva back, and you will be happy there. You don't need more prediction than that. You say you don't need somebody to tell you what's going to happen to you after that. And they're always lying, okay? They don't know. Okay? They don't have any idea what they're talking about. What do they call it? Psychic. Yeah. They want $12 or whatever. Forget it. You don't need them. You really don't need them. You can design your future yourself. Just study this, learn it. You can make stuff happen. You want to make $1 million, make $1 million. Find a partner, you can make an accident. You want to, you know, cure cancer, you can cure cancer. You don't need it then. They're not for real. You can make your own future. You don't need them. They're just taking your money. If you can find a psychic who'll do it for free, maybe they will know something. I don't know. Okay? You don't need them. We already got a... Your future has already been foretold. If you treat other people well, you'll be happy. And if you hurt other people, you will suffer. And that's all. Dena tata rangekyan kewa chima kame dhova sa lunsum tseme pinyeni dinkyan shelja shin dhiko kye jishin dhi singe manor to the sari dhi gom tsema me yi che gyepa dhi nye to cha yi nye to dhi. He says we're not at a stage in our life where we can see our future. So if you haven't reached that level, then you can't see what's going to happen to you in the future. Okay? You can't see what's going to happen to you 100 years from now, 200 years from now. You can't see it. Is it therefore not possible for people like that to see their future? Can we say that you can't see your future? If you can't see your future directly, you can't see your future. Is that a correct statement? Yeah, you can look at the seeds you planted and you can figure it out. It's called Jepak Sema, right? It's called in the first chapter of the Yoga Sutra. Pratyakshan Manadhamana. Pratyakshan Manadhamana. It's Pratyakshan, you can see things directly. Anuma, or you can figure it out. Or Agama, you can trust somebody who knows. So Anuma means. You can figure it out. How do you act in front of other people? You don't need somebody to tell your future. Or what's going to happen to you after you die. You can just look at how you've been conducting your life. And that's what will come. Okay? That's love. I think we'll stop there.
Thank you.